You're listening to the Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast. Here's the deal. If you make disciples by sitting around and talking, you shouldn't be surprised when your disciples sit around and talk and talk and talk. This is the podcast for those weary of just talking and ready to start activating in the mission Jesus gave us to change the world. The Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast, where disciples and disciple makers gather to grow and go together. Here's your host, Dr. Matt Friedemann.
All right, friends, stay tuned, stay encouraged. We've got a rendezvous with destiny. Well, welcome back. It's so very good to have you, and we're very excited about kind of getting some mojo going on this life-changing discipleship podcast, and it's just really great to have you aboard. I always kind of liked it. We know we're going to do a study today on Lamentations, some discipleship lessons out of Lamentations. But one of the fun things I like to do is just kind of say, what's kind of come across my eyes in the last few days it's kind of fun to throw it out there for you. One of the things, of course, we just got done with Pentecost Sunday. And I just love Pentecost. I just think it's important for us to think in terms of Pentecost. It's now over, but to always be thinking, what should Pentecost mean for a theology of discipleship? And I love what Stanley Jones said about this. Stanley Jones writes a book called The Christ of Every Road, in which he says, draw a line right through the New Testament. On one side is spiritual fumbling, hesitancy, inadequacy, defeat. On the other side is certainty, courage, adequacy, and victory. And that line runs straight through Pentecost. Now, it's quite an argument. If you go all the way back to Genesis, you just see God working with his people, and the people are continually disappointing. And that really is largely true, mostly true. The vast majority of the time is true right up until the day of Pentecost. And then on that side, you finally get the people of God acting like they're supposed to act and doing the Great Commission and perpetuating the Great Commandments all across the world. I think Stanley Jones is very nice, though. He says, on one side is spiritual fumbling, hesitancy, inadequacy, defeat. Really, just look at the disciples, The disciples alone have this personal relationship with Jesus Christ like no one has ever had. I mean, Jesus in the flesh. They walk with him. They talk with him. They laugh with him. They cry with him. I mean, it's an extraordinary life opened up to these disciples. And yet, they deny him. They betray him. They're arguing over which one of us is the best. They get down to the day of crucifixion, and they're running for their lives away from their friend to friends. And then, of course, even after the resurrection, it says some doubt. And then, of course, after the resurrection, they're locked in fear behind closed doors. What does it take? I mean, you talk about a personal relationship with Jesus. Apparently, something more than a personal relationship with Jesus is needed. And Pentecost gives them that more, the fullness of the Holy Spirit. And boy, does life ever change after that. So I just think Pentecost ought to be something that we really pay a lot to. Again, Stanley Jones, same book and same great book. Get the book, The Christ of Every Road. But he says, the church is living between Easter and Pentecost. Easter stands for life, wrought out, offered. Pentecost stands for life, appropriated, lived to its full, unafraid, and clearly and powerfully witnessing to an adequate way of human living. The church, says Stanley Jones, stands hesitant between the two. Hesitant, hence comparatively impotent. If the church would move up from that between state to Pentecost, nothing could stop it. Nothing could stop it. Great stuff. Great stuff. And so, y'all, we take Pentecost very seriously, and we take a second work of the Spirit in our lives seriously. We get that we all need a personal relationship with Jesus, but we also get that we all need a Pentecost, personal, corporate, and any other way we can get it. We need Pentecost. So there you have. I saw something else today by Robert P. George. He has a book apparently called What is Marriage? And I'm looking at that. Has this world gone crazy or what on sexuality? I mean, there's so much aberrant stuff going on. And this is what George says about all this. He says, I do not believe in historical inevitability. No good cause is permanently lost. So, my advice to supporters of marriage is to stay the course. Do not be discouraged. Do what the pro-life movement did when, in the 1970s, critics said, game over. You lost. In a few years, abortion will be socially accepted and fully integrated into American life. But y'all, what we need to do is speak the truth in season and out of season. Keep challenging the arguments of your opponents, always with civility, always in a gracious and loving spirit, but firmly. And then George says this, if you were told that you are on the wrong side of history, remember that there is no such thing. History is not a deity that sits in judgment. It has no power to determine what is true or false, good or bad, right or wrong. History doesn't have wrong and right sides. Truth does. So, my message to everyone is that our overriding concern be on get on the right side of truth. And I just love that perspective. Thank you, Dr. George, for that and other perspectives of your life. All right, listen, I want to give discipleship lessons today out of the book of Lamentations. And boy, I mean, if you're looking for an upper, Lamentations isn't for you. But if you're looking to fulfill the teaching of Jesus that said, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This is very much the book for you. This is the book comes right after Jeremiah and is attributed to Jeremiah. And it's shortly after the destruction of Jerusalem by Babylon in 586 BC. Five chapters, and they're all kind of depressing. There is one spot right in the middle that songs have been written about, and as well they should have been. But if you want to know, just we talk about depressing. Some of you hadn't read Lamentations for a while. So let me just read you the first six verses of the Lamentations. This is out of the NIV. How deserted lies the city, once so full of people. How like a widow is she, who once was great among the nations. Now remember, they're talking about Judah and they're talking about Jerusalem. She who was queen among the provinces has now become a slave. Bitterly she weeps at night, tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, there is no one to comfort her. All her friends have betrayed her, they have become her enemies. After affliction and harsh labor, Judah has gone into exile. She dwells among the nations. She finds no resting place. All who pursue her have overtaken her in the midst of her distress. The roads to Zion mourn, and no one comes to her appointed festivals. Verse 5, her foes have become her masters. Her enemies are at ease. The Lord has brought her grief because of her many sins. Her children have gone into exile, captive before the foe. Verse 6, all the splendor has departed from daughter Zion. Her princes are like deer that find no pasture. In weakness, they have fled before the pursuer. And it just keeps going like that throughout Lamentations. It is a depressing book. Having said that, why is it there? Why is it in the canon? Why do they think it's important to put this on us? Here's some commentary from the great ones, okay? Origen said this, the Lamentations of Jeremiah are not only the tears of a prophet, but a mirror in which every soul may see the sorrow sin brings. In other words, if you want to know how seriously we ought to take sin, then you need to be reading Lamentations because it shows what happens when not only individuals, but whole nations, whole families, whole tribes decide to go contrary to the Lord. And this thing is sobering, no question about it. So, having said that, Augustine said, the grief of the prophet teaches us that even righteous men must bear the weight of a sinful nation, and that such grief offered to God becomes a form of worship. In other words, Jeremiah is righteous, but Jeremiah is going down with his nation. And y'all, one of the reasons we want to mourn in, say, where I'm at right now, the United States of America, one of the reasons we want to mourn is when the United States go down, we will go down with it. It will be hurtful when it happens. Matthew Henry says, Lamentation shows us that it is not unspiritual to mourn deeply, provided we mourn before God and look to him for restoration. I like that. I'd take it further. I'd say, Lamentation shows us that it is spiritual to mourn. And I actually think it's unspiritual not to mourn deeply. I've been thinking a lot lately, just written a manuscript on the Beatitudes, thinking a lot lately about that blessed are those who mourn teaching of Jesus. And I've got to tell you, I think we need to be mourners. There's sin in the world and its impact is horrific. And that's all around the globe. There are people being persecuted today. There's terrible hunger, terrible disease, and we need to mourn that. And those of us who think we're just always supposed to be perpetually happy, I think know nothing about Jesus. Now, Walter Brueggemann just passed away last week. He says this: the very presence of Lamentations in the canon is an embarrassment to our culture of denial and triumphalism. It insists that we tell the truth about suffering, that there is suffering, and by the way, it's coming for us. Now, we sing this, great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness. And we think great is thy faithfulness because my life has been so good. And I'm grateful. Listen, I love singing that song. My wife's favorite song is great is thy faithfulness. But we need to remember, he's faithful when he judges us. And he's faithful to Judah and to Jerusalem, who are now in Babylon. And that faithfulness cuts both ways. When he says, you're going down if you do evil against me time after time, he means it. And faithless means he sends us into exile or worse. But faithfulness is also if you live like the way I want you to live. If you not only have a personal relationship with me, but are full of the Spirit, I will bring not an easy life. It wasn't easy for those disciples after Pentecost. Not necessarily an easy life, but I will give you the abundant life. And I think that's what we all yearn for. All right, let's get back to Jeremiah. Just some quick discipleship lessons from the book of Jeremiah. First, lament. That is being sad about the things that make God sad. Lament is central to the faith. Our walk with him is not sugar-coated fantasy. And so we need to recognize that when we see, if you go into the Psalms, for instance, and I'm in 5 Psalms a day and have been for years, sometimes 15 Psalms, but I mean, I'm into the Psalter daily. And you just see these Psalms of lament and they just keep coming at you and coming at you. There's no way to pray biblically and to pray by the Psalter without understanding lament. You get sad about the things that make God sad. And so I think lament is central to our faith. If we want to pray like Jesus, if we want to have a prayer life that makes us more like Jesus, we will be people who know blessed are those who mourn. Second of all, sin has serious spiritual, physical, emotional, and mental consequences. I mean, this destruction is a result of a long term disobedience. And life was never easy for Israel, for the nations of Israel. If in fact they were disobeying God, it was a tough life. But this, they can't believe this is happening. They have been exiled to a pagan nation. They are in Babylon. How could this have happened? Well, there's a faithful God. That's how it happens. And guess what? It has spiritual implications. You knew this all along. When you were worshiping Moloch, when you were sacrificing your firstborn son on Moloch's lap, you knew that that was headed for disaster. And here, disaster has come full throttle. And so, y'all, it has spiritual, physical, emotional, and mental consequences. And that's why we need to teach accountability for sin, and we need to teach examination of our own lives and confession, and that probably means inviting other people into our lives to give a much more objective look at ourselves than even we can do. So, discipleship lesson number 3, God's faithfulness will include both judgment and blessing. Actually, I actually think judgment is positive. Judge in the Old Testament is setting things right. So, just know that God's faithfulness includes him regularly setting things right. That is to say, punish the wicked, and that is to say, exalt the righteous. And it will happen over and over again. Again, it does not, if you're righteous, it doesn't mean you get the easy life, the biggest house, the most money, but you get abundance. You get him. And so this whole thing of God's faithfulness is so very critical. The other thing here is that's really very important for us to recognize is that hope, I don't even know what to say about this, except you got to believe. You got to believe in hope. You got to affirm hope. You've got to embrace hope. And when we disciple people, we need to let them know there is indeed hope. And y'all, I look here, one of the great passages and really an uplifting passage in Lamentations, about the only uplifting thing that's here, is Lamentations 3, where it says, "Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." I've told you about it time and again, but I have on the wall of my office a picture of George Frederick Watts's painting called Hope. And on this painting, there's a woman who's blindfolded, sitting on a very gloomy globe. It's gloomy outside, and she has a lyre, that is to say an instrument, and has one string on it and one star in the sky. And we've got to continually tell people, you have hope, because just the fact that I'm relating to you now and you're relating to me, just the fact that you have breath right now means there is one string at least on your lyre, one string on your instrument. There's at least one star in the sky. You've got to believe that he is our hope and he will bring us to a better place. Yet I will hope when circumstances seem hopeless is so very critical. And so one of the things I think we need to do is, one of the things that keeps coming up in the Psalms as I read them is remember, look back, remember, remember what I have done. And we're just so very grateful to see what God has done in the past and note his faithfulness and be able to walk backwards in the future, because we can't see the future. So we walk backwards into it with our hand in God's hand because he can see the future. I want to get to that one very, very positive verse in Lamentations. And I know this from a song. Maybe you do too. "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." Let me read that to you in the NIV. "Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. For they're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him." And then some verses that are like those, but they haven't made a song out of them I don't know about. "The Lord is good to those whose hope is" where? "In him." Not in hope. You don't hope in hope. You hope in him. "The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait patiently for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for man to bear the yoke while he is young." Seek him, my friends. It's good to wait quietly for his salvation. "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end." And there's our hope. And with that, we can definitely march forward. Lamentations, I get it out, read it. You need to read it. But it is a tough, tough book. Jeremiah's tough too. Nonetheless, that toughness, I think, leads us to a great lament. And lament means we can very much be like Jesus. We can very much live into, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." We can very much be like the people of God have always been. Yep, we lament, but we have hope. We are people of hope because we are people of him. My wife thanks you. My daughter thanks you. My sons and their wives thank you. And I can assure you that I thank you. By the way, I got a couple of grandbabies too. I'm sure they thank you. And we just want you to love God, live clean, keep the faith. God bless. Love you, dear friends. We'll see you next week on Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast.